Bryan. It's That's Life with Mark Snyder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mark. Right now, live on PNP Network is Steve Luca. They're from Toto, and one of my favorite groups in the, I guess it was on the 70s.
Come on.
Yeah, it was a while ago, but, you know, it wasn't too long ago, and not only that, there's a brand new CD out from Toto, and it's excellent. It's called Mind Fields, M-I-N-D Fields. Really nice CD.
Thank you.
I like it a lot.
I appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on with Toto in terms of this new CD and touring and things like that.
Well, we've been on the road, actually, for probably like 14 months overseas outside of the United States. And it's gone really, really well. Overseas, like, we're doing like arenas and stuff like that, and people are coming up to see us like never before. I don't know why, but like it just seems to be happening. And we're just kind of putting our feet in the water over here in the U.S.
Mm. It's really actually kind of a surprise when I was listening to it. It was kind of bringing me back and hocking me back to my childhood.
Me too.
You know, it's interesting. Many people, when they think of Toto, they think of the Pocaros.
Well, we grew up together and went to high school together.
Mm. And I know that this CD is
a family that really influenced me to a degree that I can't even put words on.
Yeah, I know that some of the CDs were dedicated to the memory of Jeff.
Jeffrey, man. And I can't believe he's not here, you know.
It's hard to believe.
I keep waking up thinking I'm going to get a phone call, you know.
Mm.
And that was 8 years ago.
It actually seems
really scary.
Seems like yesterday. Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Mm. It's interesting, before this one came out, the album Mindfields, the last one was also interesting, the Toto 20, which came out a couple
of
years ago.
A selection of CDs that, like, or not CDs, but, like, you know, songs that, like, we started recording back in 1977, just bits and pieces, leftovers, and that was sort of, like, for the people that really liked the band.
It was kind of like a rarities, you know, like the Beatles did.
Exactly what it was going to be called in the first place.
Yeah. And one of the great things on it was a live version of Africa.
We did that in South Africa with a bunch of African musicians.
It's kind of cool.
And we did like a special arrangement, like we rehearsed for a day with all these, like six percussion players and like seven, you know, legitimate African singers, and it was just really a trip to be in South Africa singing that song.
Yeah, what kind of crowds did you guys attract?
For us, you know?
What kind of crowds did you guys attract in Johannesburg?
10,000 a night for like four nights in a row.
Wow, that must have been a freak, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We're going like, wow, these people actually like us.
You mentioned that you knew that you grew up with the Pocaros. Where are you from, and how did you learn to play guitar?
Oh, Jesus. That's a pretty big question. I started playing guitar when I was 7 years old. My father bought me a copy of Meet the Beatles and a guitar.
Hmm.
Changed my life forever. It was 1964. That's how I'm dating myself right now.
Hmm. Well, we're on the same date story.
I never stopped. I never looked back.
Huh. So you were pretty much self-taught?
I was up until the point I was 15. Then I studied heavily. learn how to read, learn how to, you know, learn about jazz, classical music. It was a very studious time for about 3 years, and the next thing you know, I was like on the road with Boz Skaggs.
Wow.
And doing sessions and stuff, and I haven't looked back since.
Boy, Boz had some hot points in his career when he had that Soaked to Grease came out.
Yeah, that was basically our band, and I did that tour.
Wow.
I was like too young to do the first leg of the tour, and Jeff Picaro and David Page did the album.
Huh. I saw Boz Skaggs, and I guess it was, I don't know what no year it was, but he was with the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac at Foxborough Stadium.
Yeah.
That was quite a concert.
I bet.
Hmm. But so you got your feet warm in the...
And what year was that?
I'm not sure. 70s, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I did that tour.
Yeah.
I was just a kid.
I don't remember, like 78 or something like
yeah.
that.
Well, yeah. Well, 77 is the tour that I did. I did 78 tour, some of it. But in 78, we were making the solo album.
Well, it was probably 77, though.
And, yeah, I mean, that was...
Because I was a, I think I was a freshman or sophomore in college that year.
I was just a kid, man. I couldn't even go get a drink in the bar afterwards.
That's funny, huh? But so you warmed up doing that, and when did you write your first tune?
I was about 11.
Really? Do you remember what it was like?
I got tapes. It's not the most sophisticated shit, especially lyrically.
I once asked someone about their first song. I think it might have been Carole King or someone like that, or Carole Beryl Sager. No, actually it was Carole Connors, I think. And she actually knew it by heart, started singing it.
No,
and it was really, really funny.
That. I try to forget things like that.
Yeah, but you have to remember when she came, though. Sometimes it's important to keep rooted that way, right? Remembering some of the early stuff. Yeah. So now, how did you hook up with Jeff and his brothers?
Tripped and fell on it, really. I was just in high school. Went to high school, Grand High School in the Valley in Los Angeles. And I met Steve Picaro, and we were the same grade. And I heard he was the best musician in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to hang out with him. Next thing you know, we've been inseparable for since 1972.
Huh.
And all of a sudden I got turned on to all this stuff with, that there, I didn't know what a studio musician was. I really didn't even know what it was. I was just some rock guy, you know. And then I got turned on to all these other kind of musicians, all this kind of way of life, and started listening to different music. And that was a huge turning point.
Toto has had some immense hits. What was it like when some of these, you know, those years when everything you guys touched turned to gold?
Well, I mean, the 80s, what a great decade. Good in some ways, bad in others. I mean, there was a point where, I was playing on every record coming out of L.A. It was like the same rhythm. It was way before drum machines and home studios and all that stuff, you know?
Uh-huh.
They actually hired musicians to play on the album.
Really?
It was the same guys.
Hmm. I mean, if you look at some of the songs...
Literally thousands of albums, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's every style of music you could think of. Every great artist you could imagine. We ended up on their record. I don't even know how and why, but it was the greatest learning experience, the greatest experience, period, of my entire life.
You know, I find interesting, I'm sure you must as well, that a company like Sony Legacy is re-releasing all different types of things from Toto. They've got all little things all over the place from Toto, and now they get a new one out. Are they putting as much effort into the new one as they have mining some of the old stuff?
No.
Hmm.
We're out of our deal with them. I mean, it's ironic. We sold 30 million albums for these guys. It's going to be, and not just a long time ago. I mean, overseas, we still sell a million records every time we go out. You know?
So
we've had a problem with the United States.
Is it because
there is no relationship with the record company? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they put the records out, but they, it's come on, we're a bunch of guys, have been in the music business for 25 years, it's we've lost our, let's sell it to MTV Edge, Which is cool, hey, listen, that's fine, I got two teenage kids, and I know exactly where that's all at, so.
But, I mean, you would think that Sony, with the muscle they have, could get some of these songs, which some of them are really good songs, played.
I don't even think they listen to the records.
Well, why do they put it out there?
I mean, Legacy is different. I mean, they have a relationship, but that's sort of they do other stuff.
Yeah.
It's all like mainstream. We got a new record out. Let's like, you know, stick, you know, $500,000 behind it to see what happens. We end up spending our own money on it to do it. But overseas, like I said, this album's already done $500,000 records overseas, and we haven't. We're not an MTV band. We're just sort of like, we sell out 17,000 seat arena, and the record company comes like kind of looks confused. You know, like, how did this happen?
Some of the songs.
I'm not being belligerent.
No, I understand where you're coming from.
Like that.
But I mean, some of these songs, like After You've Gone, and some of these other ones, especially some of the ones you're singing on, they have great commercial appeal as well. You know, they're played on the radio. People, you know, we're going to play it here, and I assume that if enough people play it, it'll sell this album up.
Well, you know? Hey, God bless you, bro.
Hey, my album is all in Japanese or something.
Really?
Yeah.
So they sent you over one of those?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the irony is that it gets released in different formats all over the world with extra songs, different stuff. So I don't know why you got the Japanese version, but, you know, the music is the same.
Yeah, everything is in Japanese, though, so... I was really intrigued by the song. That was number 5 on this thing, and...
Which one was that? I don't remember.
I can read Japanese. No, I just...
Very good.
I was just joking, you know. But, no, I like the songs. I do have an English translation here for the songs, and some of them are great. I really particularly like the songs you sing on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And many of them you've also co-written. I noticed a lot of them are written as a tandem with different members of the group.
Yeah. I mean, well, David and I primarily write most of the stuff, and then we get into other aspects of it, you know, different people, lyricists we bring in mostly, because, like, you know, we found out a long time ago that unless we really buckle down and, like, you know, something inspires us, that we're mostly a musical band.
Yeah, I mean, I look at...
Our early albums had some pretty weak lyrics on it, you know, which is probably why we got our ass kicked by the critics, but...
Well, I mean, I look at, like, After You've Gone, for instance, and that one Phil contributed to. You know?
He's my neighbor, one of my best friends.
Really?
Yeah. Ironic, it's sort of not an obvious pairing, I guess. I mean, being that he came from the Ozzy Osbourne school and Billy Idol and stuff. But he's very musical, man. This guy can play so many instruments, and he's a really talented lyricist. And being as my friend, we go, like, let's bang one out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the first song you did with 3 other people, the second one you and 5 other people. I mean, you know.
Well, that's just a band sitting in a room writing a song. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's why a lot of stuff was written years ago, especially when bands were real tight-knit, didn't care about the credits as much, just kind of shared everything. Do you guys get along pretty well?
We love each other.
Yeah, well, that's kind of nice.
I mean, that's why we're still doing it, really, because, you know, all of us do other things. But there's something that brings us back to this band, you know.
Yeah.
And we just really enjoy making the music.
So do you have a family?
Yes, I do.
You have kids? Yeah, you just said you have a couple teenagers, right? Yeah. Did they kind of treat you like a rock god, or did they not even know your music?
Not hardly.
Their kids don't run around singing Africa and Roseanne?
No, they, you know, they grew up listening to it, and they like the music, but they also like what's happening now, so that's how I keep up with what's happening now, yeah.
Hey, did that song Roseanne ever help... him score with Rosanna?
That was Steve Bacall's girlfriend for a long time.
It was, huh?
Yeah.
Not a bad that girlfriend to have.
A long time ago. That was like 18 years ago, man.
Rosanna Arquette's still pretty hot. 18 years later.
I haven't seen her in a long time, but, you know.
Yeah, she's not bad looking. She's not a bad-looking woman.
No, she's not.
But she'll always be known for that song. And I noticed there's another song called Pamela.
I don't think she likes that, actually.
No? Now, who was Pamela? There was another song called Pamela.
Oh, Jesus. That was that was an old thing. We had Joseph Williams had a girlfriend named Pamela.
Oh. See? Now, none of your girlfriends got their own song?
No, I tried to avoid that.
You might have to live with that name forever, huh? How long have you been married?
I'm not married. I've been married for 10 years.
Ah. Oh. So you're having a good time, then?
I have a fiancé.
Oh, well.
And she's great, but... That's a whole other story.
I guess it is. And I see, I'm hearing this, you know, rock guy, teenage kids, by himself, having a good time. Then I hear fiancé. Kind of limits the good time a little bit, but...
Well, I had a lot of good times.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Been there, done that.
I understand that. You know, being on the road a lot, for some people, has a lot of appeal. Did you enjoy being on the road all that time?
I still do.
Really?
I mean, I don't enjoy being on the road, like, as far as, like, you really get paid for the time that you're not working. I mean, the 2 hours on stage is killer, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's what you live for.
Right.
The rest of it's really, really tough.
Yeah, living out of hotels and out of suitcases is kind of tough.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you guys get a lot of groupies still, or is that gone?
I suppose if we wanted it, it would be there, but it's not like we attract, like, young teenage girls like the guys in Korn or something like that. My son went to the Korn concert because he loves them, and they're a great band, and like, you know, it was the first time he ever saw, like, you know, thousands of naked women in one building. You know? And he's only 13, so it was an eye-opener for him.
He had a good time, huh?
Yeah.
So for you and your concert, you might have, like, 50-year-old women with their bras off, huh?
It's not that bad. I mean, honestly, overseas, it's like, you know, we have everything from, like, you know, 10-year-old kids to 50-year-old people.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm 42 years old, so the average age, I would say, is probably somewhere around, like, you know, 28 to 30, you know?
Yeah.
People that have kind of grown up with it, or either that or their uncles or their moms during the month of the music, and they all come as a group, you know?
Hmm.
It's really bizarre. And we get a lot of musicians, obviously. They could, of all ages, to come to see us play.
Sure.
There's not a lot of musician kind of bands left.
You know, you mentioned earlier
prefab stuff you put on TV, like a cookie cutter, and they sell a lot of records for like 2 years, and all of a sudden you never hear from them again.
Right. You mentioned one thing you mentioned earlier in the interview that big influence on you was the Beatles. That was the first thing you had. Did you ever get to meet any of them?
I played with them.
Ah.
And Paul McCartney.
That must have been awesome.
Jeff Everick, all those guys, I worked with all of them.
That must have been like one of the most awesome things in your life.
It was really kind of a catch-22. I mean, not catch-22, but like, it was bizarre. All of a sudden, I'm sitting in a room with Paul McCartney, and it's almost like I've never been so starstruck in my life. I was at a dinner with George Harrison. We ended up back at Jeff Lynne's house, and Bob Dylan was there. And, like, you know, and we're just sitting around jamming on, like, Beatles and Dylan songs with the real guys.
Mm.
It was pretty deep.
Yeah, see, I would get lost in that.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that because then they look at you like you're a jerk. Because they're treating you as...
Obviously I was trying to be cool.
Yeah, you're a contemporary of this.
I was going, you won't believe what just happened to me. Mm.
But I'll bet you somewhere in there, one of those guys was saying, hey, you know, I was just with Steve over from Toto.
Well,
you know? Because you're a contemporary of these guys.
I don't know, man. You know, I don't look at it that way.
Yeah,
I'm still that same kid in the garage, you know. unfortunately, I've grown up, you know.
Yeah, and sold millions of records.
I've grown older, not up.
Yeah, you mentioned Sony before, but, you know, with record consolidation, all these companies are all consolidating, and it's really getting tight. And I've noticed that a real big increase in independent releases from Anya DeFranco to all these people who own their own record labels. And I'm wondering if you guys have ever thought about putting something out on your own.
Well, we're out of our deal right now.
Yeah, so are you thinking about that?
We did our last Sony album, and they want us to re-up overseas because we still sell a lot of records over there.
Yeah.
But, like, right now is the first time in 23 years that we're not, like, bound to do something.
Hmm.
We still want to play together, but we're not really sure. You know, we're doing gigs, but we're not really sure what we want to do.
Have you considered doing something on your with your own label?
Yeah, but, you know, that always sounds better than it really is, you know?
Mm.
The reality is, like, you know, the reason why you have the big machine behind you because you have a big machine behind you.
But the big machine
and
isn't...
the cost that it costs. I mean, it's one thing to make your own record and put it out on the internet.
Mm.
But, I mean, everybody does that, you know. So you can't sell millions of records unless you're already established and you already have this big, huge machine. You have to hire, like, you have to be your own record company, which means you have to hire, like, 25 people. You have to hire all this stuff. And it's next thing you know, you're, like, $3 million into it. And you're hoping to, like, you know, break even.
Mm.
So, you know, we've looked at that as a possibility.
Are you
we
thinking
haven't actually done it yet, you know.
So, I mean, if you don't do that, what would prevent you from re-upping with Sony Legacy?
We're actually, it's Legacy in the States, but it's Columbia worldwide.
Yeah.
We're not really sure what we want to do yet. We want to see what happens, and like I said, we haven't played the United States in a long time, so we're just putting our feet back in the water.
I do think that when you get here and play some of the songs from Minefields, you're going to find a very receptive audience.
I hope so, my brother.
I like it.
So far, you know, wherever we play, it's like a tremendous reaction.
Yeah, I mean, it brings me back to some of the best stuff you guys have ever done. I think it's great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I really like it a lot. In fact, folks out there, you'll be able to get it at PMP Network Entertainment Superstore. We'll have Toto's new Mindless CD. But, Steve, it's really a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
And I hope that if you come to Boston, you'll stop by and say hi.
I definitely will.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. That's Steve from Toto here at PMP Network.